RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
The Biden administration spent almost $1 billion pushing falsehoods about COVID vaccines, boosters and masks on the American people, according to a government report of last month, October 2024. And to talk about this, because I haven't got time to read 119 pages, Dr. David Bell returns to RCR, senior scholar at Brownstone Institute and a public health physician, biotech consultant in global health, former medical officer and scientist at the World Health Organization. David, great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's good to be back.
Thanks for doing the deep dive. So this report, I think, came out last month, and it's in the name of Kathy McMorris Rogers, Energy and Commerce. You've taken a look at it, and what do you make of it?
Yeah, I have, and thanks for bringing it up, because it hasn't got a lot of prominence. And I read it, and it's actually a pleasure to read, because it's the first report on anything like this area that I've really read for a while from a government that is credible and doesn't just depress you with twisting the truth, etc. So yeah, it's you could argue it's partisan because it's from the House of Reps in the US, which is Republican majority, so they run the committee. But it's looking at and it looks at since the start of 2021, so it skips the previous 2020 Trump era, and looks at since President Biden was in power, looking at the particularly around the masks, the school closures and vaccines, but basically looking at, as it says, trying to understand the loss of trust in institutions, public health institutions, through COVID, and why this happened and what can be done about it in the future. So it's an interesting way to look at it. And they look particularly at the program that, as you said, $900 billion program to essentially convince people, so propaganda essentially, to back the use of, these measures, the masks, the social distancing, school closures, et cetera, and then vaccine mandates and mass vaccination. It's scathing, particularly of CDC, but it is packed with evidence. And you read through it, and for instance, it gives a lot of the advertisements that were used, which are propaganda for children and for adults and children, but a lot directly at children to try to convince them to tell their parents to get them vaccinated, which, obviously is wrong to start off with.
Well, that's an old tactic, isn't it? Because that was tobacco convince the kids that, hey, you're not supposed to be smoking, to the parents.
Yeah, so, but in this case, you're trying to convince the kids to have a pharmaceutical which hasn't been well tested, especially on children, but even on adults, hasn't had credible testing as we would normally a vaccine, and which, as it points out, a lot of other countries were not giving to kids and to very young kids, and there was a lot of evidence against it, which the CDC ignored. And it's got some great quotes, like they make the comment that high-ranking officials, including President Biden, knowingly made unsubstantiated claims about the vaccines that it would have been illegal for, and CDC made, that it would have been illegal for the vaccine companies to make. So all the... It concentrates a lot on the claims that it would stop transmission, for which there was never any evidence, and the vaccine companies never claimed, for which the CDC said unequivocally was the case on the basis of no evidence at all. So, it's a good read.
Wait on. So the pharma companies weren't making that claim?
No, they weren't. They never tested that.
It was the CDC. And then by extension, the president.
It points out that if the pharma companies made that claim, they'd be breaking the rules of the FDA, because that's not how it was approved, and it's not based. There's not the data they gave the FDA. They claimed it would reduce severe COVID and mortality. That's all they claimed.
I guess the question then is, did the CDC do that because pharma couldn't do it and someone had to do it in the messaging, or kind of went rogue?
Well, someone had to do it. If you look at the reasons for the program in the first place, which was said by the program to be to convince the American people that COVID-19 posed a sufficient threat to them and their loved ones, that they should follow the government's recommendations and mandates. So that was the aim of the program. The aim of the program was not to impart accurate knowledge. It was to convince people that COVID was a threat. So even though, and as the report points out, you know, in the journal Nature, it pointed out that children have a 99.995% chance of surviving COVID. And those that die, so you're getting in that one per hundreds of thousands, they're sick children, they're not healthy children. For healthy children, it's less than one in a million. Mm. Yet the CDC and this program, this propaganda program, its role was to convince parents and children that they should take this vaccine, even though there's, for healthy children, a less than one in a million chance of dying of COVID.
So why? Why?
It doesn't go into that. It comes can up I, with can recommendations
I,
for...
Has it a few options?
Oh, of course there's options.
You sell more?
Yes, obviously the vaccine companies made hundreds of billions out of this, and that is a pretty strong incentive. So it's not a strong incentive for the CDC unless the CDC or people in the CDC have strong connections with pharmaceutical companies. Otherwise, it is hard to understand why they went down this road.
I didn't mean to break your stride, but a couple of other things that caught my eye from reading through the material before we started chatting, and from Brownstone pieces, two things. The PR firm that was engaged and the spend, $20 million a month to, one, exaggerate COVID mortality risk, two, downplay the fact that there was no good evidence that the COVID vax stops transmission, as you've just mentioned. And then also CDC Director Rochelle Walensky rewriting CDC guidance on social distancing at the behest of the National Teachers Union. I mean,
yeah, that was
who's making the rules here?
So, well, yeah, but that was clear at the time. So CDC looked like they're going to reopen schools, which European countries and Australia and other countries had shown that there is no benefit, and CDC had data showing there's no benefit from masking children or from closing schools. There's no benefit to the rest of the community. They had that data. So they're going to reopen schools, but the National Teachers Union had a chat with them, and the decision was changed. So the CDC recommendations, it's up to the states in the end to close schools, but the CDC recommendations were to keep schools closed when there's transmission in the community for about a year longer than schools in Europe and elsewhere.
What else caught your attention in that report?
The recommendations are pretty good. They're pretty sensible. It's first define CDC's role so that it doesn't have this mission creep. And it turns out there's not a clear set of guidelines from Congress on what CDC should actually do. It's never been, never been written. Never go beyond product labeling, which is pretty sensible. So for the FDA, for all its faults, at least it does restrict what it approves the drug for, in this case, for stopping severe COVID and mortality, not for transmission. So there is, other agencies shouldn't go beyond what the drug is for, unless they've got very good evidence for that. Improve adverse event reporting, which is obviously pretty sensible, because, and this doesn't go into the harms of the vaccine, except lightly pointing out that there are a lot of reports and there are obvious harms. But we still don't have good data on this, because even though this was a whole new class of pharmaceuticals, there's no serious effort. The original trials were stopped, essentially. The control group was lost. And there's no serious effort to really clarify differences in outcomes overall between the vaccinated and unvaccinated people. And, yeah, improved transparency and accountability, not silenced dissenting scientific opinion, which might seem pretty novel to a lot of scientists now, but it's what we all thought was sensible in 2019. And there's a last one, improved archiving, because they point out, the committee, that while they were researching for the report, HHS and CDC were busy deleting a lot of their previous recommendations and not archiving them, so that a lot of the evidence of what went on is lost.
Well, that's a cover-up, isn't it? There's no doubt.
It would seem so.
Well, I accidentally hit delete?
Certainly it does cover up what happened. I mean, you could argue it's massive gross incompetence, but it's hard to believe that, because everyone involved would have known that there was a lot of interest in these.
You'd have to take a serious look into, wouldn't you, the other people involved here. You talk about even the president on down, knowing what he was saying in a very clear way was wrong. I mean, what's in it for him to be wrong?
Well, and in two important areas. One was in stopping transmission, which is a justification for mandates, which the federal government brought in. The other one was this, which the report brings up, the rhetoric on pandemic of the unvaccinated. So, which is worse, because, I mean, it's bad enough to have mandates on false pretenses and throw people out of work, but then to try to turn one part of the population against another on false pretenses, and have them blame people who are completely innocent, have done nothing wrong, of putting the rest of the community at risk.
Happened here, David. Our finance minister came out and said, this is the pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's exactly the same words. Probably the PR company came up with that.
And I saw a lot of my colleagues saying in public health. And it's disgusting, isn't it? It's divide people on blatantly false pretenses, false information, in order to get them to hate each other. And that's, if you're doing that and you're in public health, you should go and find another job.
I'm always trying to work out what could be going on, David. If you can launch a product like mRNA, and it's a successful launch, let's call this one an unsuccessful launch, but it's a successful launch, if it pans out for the pharma industrial complex in the Ministry of Health or whatever, Defence, then that shows people that there's a new technology, it works really well, there's the uptake, and there's the $1 trillion worth of business. But maybe it didn't work out so well because it wasn't safe. So that could have scuppered that plan. But that sounds like a logical kind of approach if you're the industry.
Yeah, it does. There's a good track record for this. So if you look at the Vioxx scandal, where upwards of 50 to 100,000 people died due to known side effects of a drug that were hidden when it was released. If you look at the opioid crisis, which is still a major killer, one of the biggest killers still in the US of young middle-aged adults. These were things that the drug companies did deliberately to improve sales, knowing the harms that would ensue. The Pfizer has paid the largest fine for fraud in human history not that long ago. So, this is a business expense for them if they do have to pay these. And in the end, these companies are there to make a profit. They're not there for altruistic reasons. They're not put there for the good of the rest of us so that we can have a healthier life. They're put there, or they are there, and they exist and they continue in order to maximize return on investment for their investors and to maximize the salaries of their directors and executives. So they're doing their job. We've just, for whatever reason, allowed this to become more important than human health and well-being.
The role of the WHO, same language from them as well, as if, I mean, we hear lockstep all the time. We've talked about this before, but there does seem to be a kind of lockstep of messaging or approach, a
yeah.
few slight differences, let's say. So you'd have to assume that they're in on it too.
Well, of course they are. Yeah, so for the same reason, they get money from the same people. They get most of their money. You know, their largest donors are either private pharma investors or countries, rather, that have very large pharmaceutical industries. And most of that funding is specified. They have to do as the funder says. So they are a tool of this pharma industrial complex. They do what they're told. And yeah, they said the same things on masks, the same things on social distancing. The vaccine, they didn't push vaccine in children, but they tried to mass vaccinate hundreds of millions of people in Africa who they knew were already immune to COVID, had already had COVID, and who had much more pressing problems. They pushed to spend about $10 billion on that program, which is three times what they spend on malaria or tuberculosis. So, they are part of this. The difference is that in the US, it's more or less a democracy. We have people who every 4 years or so can vote and make a difference. And this time around, we'll see how it turns out, but they seem to have made a significant difference. So it's going to be interesting. So they can have committees like this that dig into the CDC and pull apart what they've done. There's no one to do that for the WHO. There's no oversight of the WHO. It's above countries, essentially. And, you know, the World Health Assembly, in theory, could try to dig into it, but there's no sort of proper oversight mechanism. There's no legal framework over the WHO that can control it and pull it up when it does this sort of thing.
Which means all you can do is leave, is it? If you're a country?
You can leave, or if you're a powerful enough country with enough influence, you might be able to, by using your funding wisely and getting other countries on board, you may be able to massively reform it. One of those two. The idea of international health agencies is not intrinsically bad if they are small, very limited, and can only do what countries ask them to do. But we've got this, the WHO has constantly grown since its inception, even though you'd think health has got better and you'd think that we wouldn't need it as much, but we're told we need it more than ever, which is, if you step back and think about it, it's ludicrous. That despite the advances in medical care, et cetera, we're being told that we have more and more health threats, and we need to give up our freedoms in order to be managed by a health bureaucracy more than ever before. So, the WHO is doing this. The UN is growing. The large public-private partnerships are growing in this area. And again, this is because there are hundreds of billions of dollars that can be pulled out of this by private industry, and they back these. So this is a worry. In the US, we can do something about the CDC, the FDA, and so on. In the WHO, you could pull out, but everyone is not going to, because it's not just the WHO. The World Bank is part of this. The IMF is part of this. Openly, they're backing the WHO, et cetera. So if you're a country heavily in debt, which most countries are, and even more so since COVID, then it's very difficult for you to go against these large international financial institutions. If they tell you have to stay in, then you'll have to stay in.
Otherwise, no money.
Otherwise, no money. So it's, yeah, so it's very difficult to, so if one country gets out, so if the US gets out, for instance, that's plausible. It might make WHO stop and think, but it might also just remove what is potentially over the next 4 years a much better influence on its future, and leave it in the hands even more of these entities that just want to use it to make profit out of health.
You talked about trust before, and I guess WHO, do we trust them? Does anyone trust the CDC? The FDA, does anyone trust our Ministry of Health here in New Zealand? Does anyone trust anyone anymore, even doctors? Seems to me that that's just such a huge build back. I won't say better, build back to recover even some of that trust. I guess anything's possible, but have you given much thought to that?
Yeah, it's a good thing at the moment, isn't it? Because if you look at what happened in COVID, the public was overall was lied to. And misled grossly. And that's continuing with, you know, this threat of pandemics, et cetera, and the very false and misleading information that's coming from WHO, World Bank, and our governments on the future risk of outbreaks and on the financial return if we give more money to these companies to help us with them. So it is better that we don't trust while we are getting false information. And I think the same with the medical profession. We certainly in the US, people before COVID, people were dying more. The life expectancy is dropping, even though costs are rapidly going up. And you know, there are huge financial interests in keeping people unhealthy because if you're running pharma, or even if you're a doctor or a dentist or whatever, you want people to keep coming back because that's how you survive and pay your mortgage. So the incentives in the way that medicine is set up now are for doctors to put people on as many medications as possible and monitor them as much as possible. If we had incentives where a doctor looks after, say, 1,000 patients, and they get so much a year, whether the patients are sick or not, or whether they come to them to see them or not, then the incentive would be to get them as healthy as possible so that you don't have to keep seeing them. And then that would be interesting because then you might give dietary advice and you would reduce medications that are potentially got a lot of side effects so you don't have to monitor that, et cetera. And you would probably be much more evidence-based. So, I think with the current system, a lack of trust is good.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate that we're in that situation.
Yeah. I wonder how long it takes to dig out. RFK Jr., game changer?
I hope so. So he says that he's going to look at a lot of this. That obviously, he's interested in diet, which is a huge issue in America, but also I think Australia, New Zealand and Europe, where you have a very large percentage of the population obese and an even larger percentage hyperinsulinemic, which means you've got low-grade inflammation and increased risk of cancer and diabetes, et cetera. So doing something about that would be obviously a huge thing for health and for the economy. How easy it is to do that. There's a lot of effort to turn around. First, you've got to convince people, but you've also got to undo the sort of conflict of interest network that is pushing this. So there's a lot of incentives among US, the corporate world, to push people into having, for instance, corn syrup, because you can make a lot of money out of this. So corn syrup is in almost everything. And it is clearly not a good thing for human health in, anything like above trace quantities. So if you, to undo things like that, when they've been building up for 30 or 40 years, it's going to be extremely difficult, but it's not impossible. And if you look at, you see these pictures of the people on the beach in the 1970s compared to people on the beach now, and you can see that humans are not meant to be as they are now.
No, that's a stark reminder. That footage, even going back further, I've seen footage from the 1910s and 20s restored, and
yeah.
People are walking around the city streets and they're all looking great.
Yeah, they're all looking great. And so there's a lot you can do, and that would have more effect than probably, you know, developing new drugs and cancer therapies on health overall. So it's pretty exciting that this is happening. He looks like he's going to appoint some interesting people into these roles. So the question will be how much they can do and how much opposition there's going to be to them in the media and so on. Because one of the reasons politicians went along with COVID is because if they didn't, the media would pin every death on them. And we're going to see a campaign something like that in the media again, because the pharmaceutical companies and the food companies have such a huge potential loss in profit if people start getting healthy and eating better.
That's so crazy. Oh, dear. This is what we've come to. Coming up against time, though, I do note in the heading of this report that we started talking about at the beginning, it says, "We can do this." That kind of sounds like a bit of a throwaway line to me, like, we can do this, or we got this. You know how people say that. I just noticed that. But I guess you have to have some kind of good line to title
you do,
it with.
Don't you? Yeah. And yeah, I mean, obviously we can, but yeah, as we're just saying, it's going to be extremely difficult. But there are obvious things that you can easily do, which will have a big effect. You can bring in rules that if you work for the CDC or the FDA, then you can't work for a drug company for
5 years. You
know, 5 years or something. Yeah, 5 years at least. And that's, you'll still get people coming to work. You'll still get good people turning up to go and work there. And you can even say that you can only work in these organizations for 10 or 15 years max. And then you've got to leave.
Limit.
And that way.
Term limit.
Yeah. So that the institution doesn't become the reason you're there. You're there for a better reason. So, and this applies to the WHO as well, and obviously removing private money from the WHO and similarly removing conflict of interest and private money from the government institutions. FDA is mostly funded by pharma money, as is the TGA in Australia and the MHRA in the UK, and I imagine that.
And I think here too.
The New Zealand equivalent. So, undoing that, which is only a relatively recent thing, it's the last few decades, going back to public funding of regulatory agencies, because they're so important that you just cannot risk these conflicts of interest inevitably building up in them. So there's things like that they could do quite quickly, and they alone would undo a lot of the problems that we saw in COVID. That they wouldn't fix the health of people, but they would stop a lot of the nefarious corruption and so on that led to very poor regulatory action.
So just a little more sunlight on the scene here, but plenty more has to come. Is it more cup half full than empty? David, let's end on that.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time. It's not going to be boring watching what happens in the US anyway for the next 12 months.
No way, yeah.
And I think, they're going to make some terrible mistakes, but it's not going to be as bad as what we have now. Because I don't think you can get a lot worse than what we saw during COVID, as this report shows. So I think whatever happens, and there's going to be some missteps, and they'll be jumped on and trumpeted, overall it's going to be a huge improvement from where we are.
David Bell, thank you for coming back on RCR. Always good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.